Hi, I'm Kales, and I reread Murder on the Orient Express this month.
And I'm Allison, and I read it for the very first time.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Novel Predictions, where one friend makes another friend read a book that they like and try and make them predict what the heck happens. And I set Allison up for failure this month.
You did. In a fun way, though.
In a way that, like, I thought was okay.
Yeah. No. One of those ways where it's like, there is no way.
Mm-mm.
There is literally no way that you could predict this, but how fun will it be to try?
Because I know.
It's a mystery.
Yes. And yeah. It's like a quintessential amazing mystery. So spoilers for Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie, like mother of murder and mystery.
Yeah. I would legitimately, if you want to like not be spoiled, like if you want to experience the ending of this book, I would walk away.
Yes. Hope. I would just, you can leave now.
It's a quick read.
It is.
Come back.
Honestly, 6-hour audiobook, 250 pages. It's like the size of The Great Gatsby. It's great. And it's got so much packed into it. So you have been warned. Which we normally don't give spoiler warnings here.
No.
We normally welcome them all. But this one, we're like, yeah, no, this will spoil the entirety of the book. But if you want to be spoiled and then read it and be like, oh, that's how it all ties together. Because it's definitely one of those ones. I've read it, I think, like 6 times.
That makes sense.
It's fine. Over the course of my life, right? So we read Murder on the Orient Express. Allison gave her best shot at predictions that she could.
I tried to like think about how it would be tricky.
Yes.
And like come at it from that angle.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of things.
You did?
That were true and important.
Yes.
I was close.
I was very impressed still. Like there were some moments that when you were talking and giving your predictions and I just was like, damn right, girl. Like, all right, you're on the right track for it, which is pretty cool to say the least.
Yeah. So the things that stick out to me about my predictions that talked through in the book, I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
The person talking to the
conductor
through the door was not Ratchet.
Yep. Because he spoke French.
From a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that Mrs. Hubbard was part of the family.
Yes.
I was wrong about which person, but
that's okay. I was thoroughly impressed when you pulled that out there, though. Out of anyone that you were like, nah, Mrs. Hubbard, man.
I do love that. It was revealed in the very end that she was just an excellent actress.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was like, oh, that's why she's so fucking weird.
Yep. But she like stood out to you in that way because she was this brilliant actress.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So that was awesome.
You technically, not that you could have really been wrong, because in a way they all did it.
Right. Technically, I got it right.
Technically, you got it right because you
said... I got
one of the 12 stabs right. But that's one of the things I love about this whole concept is the idea that, in a way, Hercule Poirot could have never solved this mystery because they don't know who actually did kill him.
Right.
You could, in modern times, forensics, they do talk about the different weights of the stabs and all of that. And like theoretically, you could be like, what's the killing blow? But the idealized concept of it is that all of them took a stab at him,
right?
So that you never could know who actually physically murdered him.
Didn't know either.
Exactly. Like, so they didn't have the guilt.
Right. I think one thing that was really bugging me at the beginning of this book was resolved, thank God, was like, obviously this man is a monster. The man that died. And so they're, you know.
I keep wanting to call him. It's not Biscotti.
It's Ratchet.
It's Ratchet, but it's
Cassetti.
Cassetti.
He's a shithead. And mm-hmm. so like. My whole thing was like, this man deserves to be murdered. Like, why are we trying so hard to find this murder? So then I was really happy when Hercule was like, here are the two theories.
Yep.
Which one is right?
Yep.
And then they were like, the one that doesn't implicate anyone. He's like, great. And walks away.
Yes.
Like, that made me so happy.
Right.
Because I was like, no, like, I don't want anyone to go down for this murder because this guy was an asshole.
Right.
So
it's so fulfilling in that way.
I was really scared it was going to be like, and then they're like, I turned them in. Because I'm like, how else could it end? But I loved that he was like, here's an alternative that the cops will believe.
Yep.
Which one's right, everybody?
And then they agree. And he just leaves it up to them. Because at the end of the day, he could have presented that to the cops, but it was very far-fetched, for one.
Yeah.
And two, it does have that theory of like, how is that going to stand up in a court, even in the 1930s,
right?
Of like who actually killed him? They don't know.
Right.
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that was legitimately my favorite twist of the book.
Right.
That they were not going to pursue justice
mm-hmm.
or that you know, the idea that justice was served.
Yes.
And I did not see it at all, but I loved the concept of there's a 12 people on a jury.
Yes.
And there's 12 people here.
And 12 stab wounds. Right. And it's like he actually got convicted because he didn't and he got away.
Yeah.
And it he should not have.
Right.
And it's so good. It's so well crafted.
Like, and the long con of like all these people working for him.
Oh my God.
And doing all this. Like, I was very happy as it was starting to come together and it was like more and more people were being implicated. And I was like, oh. Okay.
When did it start to click for you? Do you remember?
I think.
Because obviously it was before his big monologue. Right. That some of the pieces were starting to click into place in part three.
There's obviously more than one person going on here. So I think I was pretty convinced that it was more than one murder or more than one stabber.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were convinced of that early on. You said in your predictions that you were convinced it was Hubbard and the valet, which
it was.
It was. It was more than that.
Yeah.
But you were right. So when did you know it was even more than the two?
I think when they started talking, and this is maybe a weird pull, but they started talking about the Swedish woman and the sponge bag and checking that the door was locked. When all of that was coming out and it was very inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, so this woman is colluding.
Yep.
With somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I think it was very clear to me that there was some larger conspiracy here when he started connecting people to the family.
Yes.
Because that started happening before the like huge announcement, right? He connected, mm-hmm. He connected Mary pretty, not early on, but like,
yeah,
before he brought everyone in and the only people he had left to really connect were Mrs. Hubbard and the Englishman, I think.
Yes.
And then when the Duchess or the princess.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, I know these people. I was like, girl.
Yep.
I was like, even if you didn't do anything, like, you definitely.
You're guilty by association at this point.
Yeah, you like sent your maid to do something or something, you know? I also loved that they didn't have the sister participate.
Yeah, I thought that was a big deal.
Right? Like, they're like, you're not.
Helena.
Helena, yeah. They're like, you're not going to be guilty in this no matter what. I thought
you've already suffered too much.
Right. Because the Germans, they were like, quote, German, right?
Yeah, Hungarian.
Oh, Hungarian, maybe. The Dutch and Duke and Duchess or whatever.
Because mm-hmm. he's Hungarian. She married him,
she
right?
She married like, him, right?
That was legit. But
they're sus from, like, jump.
The fact that the inkwell on her name, when he starts interrogating her and that
spot,
mm-hmm.
and then him being like, well, you don't need to interrogate my wife, like his whole insistence. I was like, you are involved,
you're
like,
guilty,
you're important in some way. Yeah, no, I feel like I was starting to piece together that it was more than two.
Mm-hmm. Like during the interrogations
when he started laying his cards out and being like, you know this family.
Did you ever think it could have been all of them? Did that ever occur to you, even like as a fleeting if that you can remember anyway?
No, because I hadn't figured out that the conductor wasn't actually involved until the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really what ties it all together, right? Because it's like the conductor is involved and that means that's why everybody's on this train.
Yep.
I didn't think he was involved.
Mm-mm.
Until the final reveal. Michelle, yeah. Because I was like, how could he be, you know? So that, I think, was the biggest twist for me, really, was that he was part of this parcel of people who knew the family. And
absolutely, yeah.
Or his daughter died because of the death of this little girl, because I couldn't connect how he was involved with the family at all.
Right.
You know, everybody else was like, American. And we talked about that earlier.
We did.
Where it was like, why are all these fucking Americans on this train? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So his involvement, I think, was my largest surprise. The thing I saw coming the least.
Yeah. Which is so, again, it's just brilliant and so well thought out and so well crafted and so tight as a story.
He's the alibi for fucking everybody.
I know.
I mean, everybody. Because everything is, the whole timeline is built on him sitting there.
Yep.
And he's just lying. I mean, mm-hmm. which is great. But it's like, you are built, you are convinced from the jump that his part of the tale is irrefutable.
Yeah.
And then it is like, nope.
It is refutable.
A lie.
It's very, very, very refutable.
Like, he did go talk to those other conductors because mm-hmm. they needed to have that same timeline. But all the time. He was like, well, I was sitting there and I didn't see anyone. That's just fucking people coming in and out of the room stabbing.
Yep. It's crazy.
I actually can't remember whose kimono the red one is now that I'm sitting here.
They just brought it. It wasn't anybody's.
It was just a diversion.
Uh-huh.
Oh, right. Because they made the noise to make Perot come out to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then some cheeky asshole put it in his suitcase, which I feel like is honestly their downfall.
That was the one. Yeah.
It was a big mistake.
But think about how much planning it took, right? And then the snow fucks everything up. And then Perot being on it, right? They didn't have the length of time with which they planned this whole big con, you know?
Right.
So I think that that makes sense as their downfall, you know? And I think the sewing bag or the sponge bag was also just a huge...
It's just an oversight.
It's just an oversight.
Well, because the whole conversation about she could have seen the lock from where she was because of the position of her room, blah, blah, blah. That's just something you wouldn't think about.
No. Well, and it's also not something that in the book, it has to be told to you, right? Because you can't see it.
Right, right.
Whereas if you're watching something like Knives Out or Glass Onion...
You might see it.
Right. So like when I watched Glass Onion, spoilers for Glass Onion, I remember watching Edward Norton switch the drink, right? I watched that shot and I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, and so then I gaslighted myself, or the movie gaslit me into thinking that, which was part of the thing, right?
Yeah.
But in a book, you can't exactly say in a visual, like you can't say that the lock is on the other side. So it's a little bit more complicated. And that's why, like, some mysteries work so well in visual mediums and some mysteries can't be. Because you can't tell Glass Onion in a book. It doesn't work. And
yeah, you'd have to go about it in a different way.
Exactly. But Murder on the Orient Express, though, has been adapted and can be. I actually saw before COVID hit a really wonderful adaptation at the Arvada Center.
Mm.
They did a play version and it was in the round and it was very good. The train was lights and stuff. It was very cool how they did it.
Nice.
But yeah, it's just interesting to me because those are things you're not going to know. Yeah. You're not going to pick up on. It's like, and that's why when I was giving you this book, I wasn't giving it to you so that you would be right. It's mainly, I just wanted you to read it more than anything else in the world. I was like, please, dear God, I know you will like this book.
Yeah.
And it was one of those ones where I think, kind of like how I felt about Two Wrongs Make a Right, that I think you'd be okay with being wrong about.
Right. Yeah. I have no issues with being wrong. I did text you immediately and I was like, there's no way I could have predicted this.
I thought you were mad when you texted
it. I wasn't mad, but I was just like, it's not possible.
Right.
Not that's not the point of this show.
No, it's not. It's not. It's to get the other friend to read books that they wouldn't normally read and commit to it. And also have fun in a weird way about
either being
books
excited
and story.
That you did predict it, or indignant that you didn't.
I know. And so I think this is one of the rare cases where it's like, it's not indignant so much as it's like, yeah, all right,
I appreciate skill.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
and she is the queen for a reason, right? Agatha Christie still holds this title. Nobody usurps her. So she is the actually best selling female author of all time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's like 35 Hercule Poirot books.
Yeah, I realized I misquoted last time. I said it was like 12 or 16 or some shit.
It's like
it's 8. It's number 8.
Oh, this list. Murder on the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. Is.
Murder on the Orient Express is 8.
Yeah.
So the whole list is here on this back of the copy that I have, the William Morrow copy.
Yeah. So I think I enjoyed this book. I don't know if I care enough to read more of them.
You don't need to. I think that's the thing, is that it's more about, like, because they are individual stories, right?
Right.
It's not like fucking like Dresden Files. Like the Dresden Files.
They build on each other.
They build on each other. The first like 6 are kind of like this, where they can be read alone. It's set in the world. It's not really there. But once you get past like book 6 and he's established each of the different worlds of magic, you're fucked if you try and get like start at book 12.
Right.
And they build off his other and his character development. I mean, at one point he fucking dies. And one of the mysteries is him like trying to solve a mystery as a ghost. Like, I'm dead serious. And so it, you know, these are not like that.
Right.
You can pick up any Hercule Poirot mystery, brand new mystery, kind of like a romance novel in that way.
I think it's the picture of the genre, but I think it's also like of its time of like,
absolutely.
That like pulp novel.
Mm-hmm.
Where you wouldn't necessarily read a series mm-hmm. like that.
I think it literally is not even like, and again, I could be way wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, I think it's just like when they were published. It's not even like
timeline necessarily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause is the one right before it about what the fuck he was doing in.
I don't know.
Lord Edgeworth dies.
I don't know offhand.
Cause it could be.
Maybe.
It could be chronological.
But she also would write ones without Miss Marple, who's her other heroine, or Hercule Poirot. Like, and then there were none.
Yeah.
Doesn't have either of them.
Yeah.
So, and like, you know, when Kenneth Branagh was adapting these, you know, he did Murder on the Orient Express and then he jumped right to Death on the Nile. It wasn't like he was doing them in order, like Chronicles of Narnia or some shit, you know? Right. So they're not meant to be that way. That's why it's just like a Hercule Poirot mystery. It's right. not building on the trauma. It's not even like what we know today as serials in television shows, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're episodic yes. in that way.
Yeah.
So no, I don't actually think I haven't read them all. I've read, I think, two or three. No, they're just good. Yeah. They're good snippet mysteries. And I'm just really, well, you enjoyed it. That's what I'm hearing. I guess I didn't ask that.
I did. I enjoyed it. I think.
What'd you rate it?
Oh, God. Probably a 4.
Yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed it less if they had prosecuted the people.
Fair enough.
Or if it had been like, this is like, these people are going to go down.
That ending really ties. It's pretty brilliant.
It endeared me to Hercule Poirot's character mm-hmm. in a major way.
Absolutely.
I laughed out loud several times at this book.
He's so funny.
He's such a funny little Frenchman. Like, he's just like, kind of has his little uppity things. Yep. And he's, yeah.
The mustache.
The mustache and the cigarettes and the like.
Yep.
The like weird comments and mm-hmm. I laughed several times.
I kind of want to get you to watch the Kenneth Branagh movie because it's good all the way up to the end. Because
is that the newest one?
Yeah, because the old ones are good too. I'm not gonna lie, the old school like 1960s ones, those are fun to watch. That's when I first was introduced to it. Was actually I saw Murder on the Orient Express before I read it because my grandparents have been on the Orient Express, and so that was kind of how it was introduced into my life, as they were like, we've been on this train. And I'm like, what the hell does that train matter? And I'm like 8. And then they're like, here, books, history, have fun, movies. And so, because I actually talked to my grandfather recently and I was like, I didn't really like the Kenneth Branagh one. I didn't like how they did it. And he was like, I loved it. I thought they did such a good job and blah, blah, blah. And so it was making me want to rewatch it again.
Yeah.
But I remember in the ending, they kind of make, I think it's Kenneth Branagh wanting to importantize himself, grandize himself a little bit.
Okay.
But they give Hercule Poirot kind of this like, more turmoil over what the fuck he should do at the end.
Oh.
Of turning them in or not.
I see.
And it fucks it up to me. And I just am like, I don't need this monologue of Kenneth Branagh in the snow deciding if he's going to turn them in or not and then doesn't. It's like, no, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is that he doesn't. And the point is he solved it.
And that's all that matters to him.
And that's all that matters to him is he's like, I solved the puzzle. Ta-da. That's right. It. And ugh, no. It was like way too much of a moral dilemma. And I'm like, I don't need Michelle Pfeiffer like trying to convince him why this is like morally correct. Ugh, I didn't need it.
Because I feel like Hercule Poirot in the book is like, he doesn't give a shit about the law or justice. He's just trying to solve a puzzle.
He likes truth.
He's like a kid with a Rubik's Cube.
Basically, that's not his job. He has a separation of it. He's like, here's the information. You do what you want with it. Yeah. Right? So, but yeah. That's, I think, one of the reasons I like him.
Yeah.
Is that it is just the puzzle solving. We don't have to get into the justice part of it. That's not the part of this mystery that we get.
It's morally ambiguous. He doesn't care. Yeah. He doesn't really care about the reason.
Yeah.
You did the thing either.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, these are the facts.
This is what happened. I figured it out. Ta-da.
I solved the puzzle. Be proud of me.
Ta-da. Now I get to go to the next thing.
Yeah.
Ta-da. You know, that's all it is. And that's also, I think, part of what's really endearing about it.
I think so, too. I think that his characterization in that way made me like the book even more.
Can I point out one of my favorite parts
mm-hmm.
that might have gotten blown over? But when they talk about Hercule Poirot sitting down and having a think, and they go into the minds of the other characters. Can we talk about how funny that is?
Oh, my God. Okay.
I want to see if I can find it. But yeah, go ahead. Talk about it.
It's at the very beginning of the third act.
Yeah.
So I'm forgetting their names. It's the doctor and the like train.
Yeah. The train
owner guy.
Uh-huh.
And the train owner guy is just like a big dum-dum. And it's just like, I'm so confused. But then the fucking doctor is like talking, thinking about shit, and then starts thinking about his affair.
It was so great. Okay. Yeah. Here. It was like, it's chapter three, and it's like, it's a quarter of an hour before anyone spoke. Monsieur Bock and Dr. Constantine had started to try and obey Poirot's instructions. They had endeavored to see through the maze of conflicting particulars to a clear, outstanding solution. And then it's like, his thoughts had run as follows. And then it's this long ass paragraph of him trying to go. And he's like, they will make a grand affair of all this. There's not even a chance that it comes this way. It will be in all the newspapers. And then Dr. Constantine is like talking about Hercule Poirot and how weird he is. And like, if my wife ever fights the affair, I can't.
It's just like tacked on to the end.
I know.
Just like, and then it talks about his erotic thoughts.
Yes.
That part, I was like, what?
I was like, okay, Agatha Christie. I don't think I caught on to that. This, like I said, it's as like my child. Sixth time reading it. But as a child, or even, I read it, Seth and I listened to it on an audiobook on our way to a wedding to Minnesota once. And even then, I don't think I noticed it. But like sitting here listening to Kenneth Branagh talk about it, I was like, it's chapter three.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, I think I just want to find the line blushes.
It's chapter three. So it's somewhere in there. I really just wanted to point that out because on a personal note, I was like, I don't think I ever fucking noticed this before. And it's hilarious.
God, I have to find it. It was so funny. I wonder what Z is doing at the moment. If my wife ever finds out.
It's also just like, that's the moment you know this was written by a woman.
Right, exactly. Oh, here it is. I too have reflected with great earnestness, said the doctor, unblushingly, recalling his thoughts of certain pornographic details.
Yes.
I'm like, is that what it means?
Yes.
I think it is what it means.
It is what it means.
He got a little off track and a little horny.
He got a little horny. But it's funny. Like, it just, and like I said, I don't know if where my headspace was other times I had read it or just hadn't stood out, but I was like, I gotta talk to her about the sitting down and thinking part.
I laughed so hard at that part. I was like,
isn't it surprising how amusing this book is?
Yeah, I feel like all of it just really speaks to her writing style. Yeah. That she can make all these little peculiar things that Poirot does and some of the other characters, but mostly him,
mm-hmm.
so funny.
Yeah.
Like the impact that they have on the story is pretty minimal.
Yes.
But it's just like this little quirk and you're like, what?
But it also like comes to life. You can totally see it.
Yeah.
Like it's so visual. So, well, I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you gave it a 4-star. I gave it a 5 because you can't hate this. I can't hate this book. I love it. She's brilliant. It's a classic for a reason in my world. And it's very influential on a lot of other writers and readers. And I'm just so glad to have like introduced it to you. So now you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I really liked it. I think
and it was different for us, right? Like
different.
We have it. This is probably the oldest book we've read. It was published in 1934.
It's definitely the oldest book we've read. And I think it's also the first like actual whodunit style mystery we've ever done,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting to look at that through the lens of trying to predict it.
Absolutely.
Because everyone's trying to predict it. That's the point of the book.
I don't know a single person in my life who has called it ever.
No, I was talking to Nate about it and I was like, I just finished. And we own the book because he bought it. And I swear he's read it. But he was like, I don't think I've read it. And I was like, you definitely have read this. And I was like, you would remember though. Like, I don't think you could forget
mm-hmm.
how this book ends. So I was like, maybe you didn't finish it.
Maybe.
And you need to do that because you're...
Well, get in the audiobook. The audiobook is amazing. Or hell, we'll have a movie night.
Yeah.
But
he's like a big baby about spoilers. So, and this is one you wouldn't want to spoil anyway.
Oh, no.
But I was like, I said something to try to like test the waters if he remembered something from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, well, you got to read
it. Yeah. No, he should read it. Yeah. Like I said, Seth and I were driving from Wisconsin to Minnesota for a wedding. And I was like, what do you mean you've never read this book? And I looked it up and it was 6 hours long. And I was like, that's our trip. We're doing it. And he's like, really? No music? I was like, we can always turn it off. If you want to turn it off and you want to do music, that's fine. He was in it the whole way. We like sat in the parking lot of our Airbnb for like the last 5 minutes of it because we couldn't finish. And it was just so good. And then, like I said, I gave it to my father-in-law who now just is running through the Hercule Poirot mysteries. He's obsessed right now, which is so cool. So, and my grandfather loves it. It's a classic for a reason.
No, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that being said, where are you taking me?
We are taking a journey to a less realistic world.
Oh God.
But not.
It's under 500 pages, right? Or it's under 300 pages. 300 whatever pages, right?
It's like 350.
That's fine. That's our limit.
Yeah.
It was like 360 or something. Yeah. Some shit.
It's in the three. Yeah, I think.
I think it's under 400. Under 400 we said. Yeah.
It is pretty recent. So we're coming back into recent memory. I think it was published in the last 5 years.
Oh, okay. So we're taking a huge, like,
huge
time leap.
Yeah.
Do I know it?
Yeah. 100%. Okay. There's no way you don't. This is one of those books that I feel like I want you to read because it's like almost a current cultural touchstone.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So our next book is House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune.
Fuck me.
Why?
I don't know why I have an aversion to this book.
Yeah. Why do you have an aversion to this book?
It's probably because it's popular. Honestly, this is probably goes back to my weirdo kid roots of wanting to be different. And so I didn't like things that other people really, really liked. I have since matured and broken away from that. But every once in a while it pops back up and I just am like, I don't have an excuse as to why I don't like this thing except for the fact that everybody else likes it. And so I also feel like this is going to be one of those ones that I like eat the living daylights out of my words of everything that I'm saying right now. I'm going to just be like in two more episodes be like, I'm so sorry. like take it back.
I feel that way too. I think you're going to, I could be wrong, but I think you're going to really love this one. I feel like it's,
is it overrated? I also have heard people say that it's like way overrated.
I don't think it's overrated.
You don't think it is? Okay.
I loved this book. I think that it's, I think his second one in the same kind of vibe was less powerful.
I've heard it's kind of like it's a better attempt at what Ransom Riggs was trying to do with Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Because he bombed that hard.
Yes. And from the perspective of
the caretaker, right?
Kind of.
Oh, God.
From the perspective of the insurance auditor. So,
what?
Which you will find out immediately. Okay. So it's this really interesting world from that. And I remember when I first started reading it, I was like, what is going on? But I think it's just enough fantasy and just enough mystery and just enough like heartfelt found family.
I think that'll be good.
I think it's just a complete delight of a book. So So
I don't own it.
If you would like to read with us.
Yep, you can do that.
And if you haven't read this one yet, I highly encourage it.
Or if you want to reread it.
We're going to read about the first 20%, but we will officially post that on our Fable so you can read along with us.
Yes. And yeah, damn. Okay. Man, that's not where I thought you were going. She was trying to pick the book and she was like, what are you in the mood for to like be kind? Because sometimes we're nice to each other and we're like, we're not going to just give you a fucking big ass fantasy out of nowhere. And I was like, I'm kind of like in the mood for a thinky book, but I'm enjoying Harp. And she like nailed it on the head after what you just said of like, it's gonna make me think, but it's also gonna make me feel some hard feelings.
It's
so
heartfelt.
Yeah,
it's heartfelt. The other book I had in mind was a mystery, but I felt like because we just did like the mystery,
yeah,
I wanted to skip that and give a little bit more of a interesting kind of speculative fiction situation. So
great, sounds awesome. Well, The House in the Cerulean Sea by
T.J. Klune,
that's it. And we'll be reading that next month. Thank you for joining us. You can follow us along on Fable, as Allison mentioned earlier. We're just really excited to keep doing this and to read some things that we just haven't read before. That's one of my favorite parts of this little mini book club that we've got going here. So,
me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm Kales.
And I'm Allison.
Keep making novel predictions.
Bye.